This morning, the Bible reading will be from 1 Kings chapter 17 through 24. And it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick. And his sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him. And she said unto Elijah, "What have I to do with thee, O thou man of God? Art thou come unto me to call my sin to remembrance and to slay my son?" And he said unto her, "Give me thy son." And he took him out of her bosom and carried him up into a loft where he abode and laid him up on his own bed. And he cried unto the Lord and said, "O Lord my God, hast thou also brought evil upon the widow with whom I sojourn by slaying her son?" And he stretched himself upon the child three times and cried unto the Lord and said, "O Lord my God, I pray thee, let this child's soul come unto him again." And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the child came unto him again, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down out of the chamber into the house and delivered him unto his mother. And Elijah said, "See, thy son liveth." And the woman said to Elijah, "Now by this I know that thou art a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in thy mouth is truth."
Good to see everyone out this morning. Appreciate Brother Jim doing the reading for us. The Old Testament rarely records miraculous activity. One segment of the Old Testament that has multiple miracles is the period of the deliverance of Israel from the Egyptian bondage up to the time that they received the Promised Land. The vast majority of those miracles involve Moses. And then when you get to the book of Joshua, there are a couple more miracles that occur during the time of Joshua's leadership of the people. The other major period in the Old Testament where numerous miracles occurred is during the prophetic ministries of both Elijah and Elisha. In this series this month, we are looking at events in the life of Elijah. During the time of the writing prophets, there are numerous visions and divine messages that are delivered in a number of ways, but with the exception of the period of the book of Daniel and the miracles that we're all familiar with in the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and in the story of Daniel, most of the rest of the time of the prophets particularly, there's an absence of miracles. But there were miracles during the prophetic ministries of Elijah and Elisha. And the reading this morning looks at one of those as Elijah raises the widow's son. So when we look at this, and we're not going to reread what Brother Jim just read for us. If you remember the background of this story, Elijah was instructed by God to travel to Zarephath and dwell there with a widow. And Elijah had done this. 1 Kings 17:19 in the reading that we had this morning indicates that he was actually lodging in an upper room at the widow's house. That was not unusual for this region of the world. It existed all the way up through the time of Christ. The construction that characterized Palestine and that area was plaster and flat roofs. And oftentimes on top of the roof, they would build a little room. And they would use it sometimes in the summertime when it was too hot in the house. They might use that rooftop as a living area. What they used a lot is as a guest area or as a place that the owner of the house could even make a little income. If you remember, Jesus had his disciples find an upper room in which they observed the Passover and where he instituted the Lord's Supper. So we come to this passage and this miracle. In the last week's lesson, we looked at Elijah going and being instructed by God to go and to live with this widow in Zarephath. And we weren't told timelines at all. When we had the miracle of God providing her flour and her oil so that it did not run out as long as she was taking care of Elijah, all the passage said was that it continued for some time and didn't give us any definite time frame. And so this passage starts out saying, well, after those things, this happened. And so there's absolutely no time frame provided for us as to how long Elijah was with this woman, how long her oil and flour lasted, and how long after that miracle began that this event actually occurs. But it's simple enough. The event itself is simple enough. The miracle begins with this widow's son becoming severely ill. And you remember in last week's story, when Jesus first met her, she was getting ready to fix the last of her food for her and this son and assumed that they would die of starvation because they had no more food. But that was provided to her, and now life has gone on. And at some point, this woman's child becomes ill and dies. We're not told any other details about this, about the son. We really don't know whether he was a very young child or just a young man. And when you look at artwork, I picked this off of one of the websites. But what interested me was there were about 20 different artist depictions of Elijah raising this young man and raising anything from like a preschooler to a fully grown man. And so we're just not told. The one indication I would get that he wasn't that old or that large was that 1 Kings 17:21 does call him a child. But that's okay. People ask me if I have any children, and I'll name them. And the youngest of those is in her 30s, and the oldest one just had his 43rd birthday yesterday. And I still call them my children. But I'm not about to carry them upstairs. And that's what it says that Elijah did to this young child. He died, and Elijah carried him up the stairs, up to his room in the upper room. So that would indicate to me that it's a younger child. We're told that Elijah stretches himself out on the child three times and prays to God and says, "Let this child's life return to him." God answers the prayer, the child regains his life, and Elijah returns the now living child back to his mother. That is the simple story that this passage tells us. So in thinking about those things, there's several different observations that I want to talk about as we look at different aspects of this story. First, we look at the widow herself and Elijah in the exchange, and we see that it really, when the boy dies, it creates a confrontation. What we observe in the mother is one of the natural reactions of human beings to death, particularly to death of someone that is dear to them, and that is the emotion of anger. Now, I will tell you that in the original Hebrew, this passage allows itself, there's disagreement among the scholars as to how the mother's response to Elijah should be translated. I read out of the New American Standard. I'm not sure what do you read out of, Jim? Was that out of, what version were you reading out of? The New King James? Okay. In the New American Standard, it's very confrontational the way they interpret the language. It says, "What do I have to do with you, O man of God? You have come to me to bring my iniquity to remembrance and to put my son to death." Now, this is a woman that was starving to death until Elijah came into her life. But the way the New American Standard reads, that makes it look like that she's very upset with him and accusing him. "If you had not come here, my son would have never died." And that's in the New American Standard. The English Standard Version, which are pew Bibles, reads that way. So does the Revised Standard, the New Revised Standard, and the Old American Standard. But the New King James and the Old King James and the NIV, if you use that Bible, treat it differently. This is the way it reads. "And she said unto Elijah, What have I to do with thee, O thou man of God? Art thou come unto me to call my sin to remembrance and to slay my son?" It's almost like it's a plaintive question. What's this all about? How am I supposed to understand that? And so it hinges upon the translation of a couple of Hebrew verbs, and I'm not a scholar and not going to get into that. What I think about as I look at all the translations is whichever reading you would prefer, it is obvious that this mother is distraught. And the anguish and the anger she is feeling because of the death of her son. And you think about it from a human perspective, what it would be like to think that you were going to die, starve to death, and then this miracle happens and you have all the food you need. And life looks like it's good again. And then have this happen. It would be kind of like someone who was worried about a loved one because of some illness that might take their life. And they worry about it and they're distraught about it. And they go through the treatments. They're at the hospital with them all the time. And they get the word, "You got a clean bill of health." They get in their car to go home and they get run over by a semi-truck and killed. You know, the anguish that would be felt because I thought I was out of the woods. And now this has happened. But the second thing that we can notice about this woman is how willing she was to change her evaluation of the situation. Because after the miracle is performed and Elijah brings her son back to her alive, she says, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth." This affirms to her who he is, and even more than who he is, it tells her when he says something, it's true because God is with him. So I think we can learn that from looking at the widow. The second set of observations is really looking at Elijah himself. And Elijah is the prophet of God. He does what God tells him to do from the very beginning of his ministry. Whatever God told him to do, he did it. He was in Zarephath at this widow's house because God told him to go there. But Elijah has his own questions about what has transpired. And so we find him asking God, he says, "O Lord, my God, have you also brought calamity to the widow with whom I am staying by causing her son to die?" Now I want you to notice that Elijah is not accusatory in his statement, but he is questioning. Why did you send me up here? Why did you provide this miracle and then have this woman's son die? And I want to suggest to you that that is very much a normal human perspective about things, that we question why things happen.
and what the cause of them is and those type of things. And if we think that the prophets knew everything about everything, that's just really not so. On a much more important subject, that is God's plan of salvation and the various roles different things would play in it, Peter observed this about the prophets in 1 Peter 1 and verse 10. He says, as to the salvation, the prophets who prophesied of the grace that will come to you made careful searches and inquiries, seeking to know what person or time the Spirit of Christ within them was indicating as he predicted the sufferings of Christ and the glories to follow. It was not revealed to them that they were not serving themselves but you in these things which have now been announced to you through those who preached the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things into which angels long to look. So Peter says the prophets who gave us these prophecies that are the foundation of the proof of Jesus being who he truly is, the Son of God, said they didn't always understand what it was all about. That they themselves tried to figure these things out. And many times they didn't. And in fact, I think what you would find if you took a whole study of the Old Testament and the prophetic work of the Old Testament is they didn't know what it meant unless God told them. They could look into it, but they really only understood it when he said, this is what this means. And so I understand how Elijah would have those same kinds of questions that we as human beings would have. And I want to suggest to you that I think it's totally wrong when some people criticize people for having questions that are difficult. As you develop and mature in life, you're going to have questions. As you become a Christian, you're going to have questions. And the problem is not questions. Questions say, I don't understand this, I need to understand it better. It's what is your solution to that question? And I think this is the great lesson for us in this story of Elijah, from Elijah. Because you know what Elijah's solution to the fact is that he didn't understand what was going on? He prayed. He took those things to the Lord. It says he prayed three times over the child, asking for God to do something about this that he just did not understand. And what happened? God heard him. And God granted life to the child. Well, let's look at a couple of general observations and we'll close this portion of our service this morning. One of the things we notice is that this woman connected the illness of her and ultimate death of her son to her own sinfulness. Did you notice that? This is a punishment for my sin. You are a prophet of God. You came and all you've done is pointed out to me how sinful I am. And my son has died. Well, that's a common yet false conclusion drawn by men. You remember when Jesus in John the 9th chapter heals the man born blind, that story starts with this question asked by the disciples. John 9 and verse 2, his disciples ask him, Rabbi, who sinned that this man would be born blind? Their question was, is he blind because he sinned or is he blind because his parents sinned? And the passage told us he was blind from birth. So think about what they were thinking. That before he was born, did he sin so that he would be born blind? They connected that idea. And that's not your only case in the Bible. An entire book, the book of Job, has three friends visiting and, quote, comforting Job in his affliction. And Job did say to him, you are some of the worst comforters the world has ever known. But in those three friends, what was their message to Job? You have to be a wicked man or these things would not have happened to you. But what we understand when we look at the entire picture of the Bible, Jesus answered it very definitely. He told his disciples in John 9, neither. This isn't because his parents sinned, and it's not because he sinned. These sometimes things just happen in life that are not good. So it's not a necessary conclusion. In fact, it's a totally unnecessary conclusion to conclude that bad things are happening to people because they're bad, or it's direct punishment for their sins. Because Jesus said that's not what happened in the case of this man. That's not what happened in the case of this woman. And then the last thing that I wanted to point out that is, I think, is very important in this story is that we notice the critical difference between this miracle and similar miracles done by Jesus. Elijah's God's prophet, and he is certainly concerned and distressed by the death of this young man. But how can he respond to that? He had to ask God to do something about it. So he prayed to him three times, please give this child their life back. And it's a miracle. The child is restored to life. But compare that to what we see in our Lord. In Luke 7, we have the story of Jesus visiting a little town called Nain. And as he enters the town, there's a funeral procession, and it's the only son of a widow woman. Situation very similar to this woman's Zarephath. And Luke 7 and verse 14 says, and he came up and he touched the coffin, and the bearers came to a halt. So Jesus stops the funeral procession, and he says, young man, I say to you, arise. And he came back to life. In John 11, when he stands outside the tomb of Lazarus, Lazarus, come forth. And at the voice of Jesus, he came forth. I think when you think in those terms, you see the great difference between the Son of God and all those who were simply the servants of God throughout history. After all, isn't that what the Pharisees, officers, when they heard Jesus present what we call the Sermon on the Mount, isn't that the report that came back? No one else has ever spoken like this man. He speaks with authority. And so, as marvelous as this miracle is, it is Elijah beseeching the help of God. And when we come to the New Testament for the miracles of Jesus, it is Jesus displaying that he is God. So this miracle, in conclusion, demonstrates how God used Elijah to demonstrate his power. It served the purpose to demonstrate that God had commissioned Elijah to his role as the prophet, and the woman quickly understood that. But God is not done with Elijah, and he is going to demonstrate Elijah's ministry and his power through God in a more spectacular way. And Brother Allen will talk about that in next Sunday's lesson. So before we go to our classes, Brother Cliff will lead us in prayer, and then we'll be dismissed to our classes.